going on down there?
Ladies and gentlemen, let's knock it hard with another episode of WTF Prime Time! This is Vangelis. I'm joined once again by Gog Dog, coming to us from a fancy pants room.
Yeah, in a undisclosed hotel location on the outskirts of Cleveland, Ohio. I feel bad for the people who live in Middleburg Heights, because your Walmarts suck really badly. But that's neither here nor there.
Do you think you're going to be able to pull off EP221 to talk about that a little bit more?
I'm not sure, because we're moving to a different hotel.
Oh, okay.
So keep me in the loop. We will see.
Yeah, keep me in the loop.
I will.
All right, and also with us today is Aaron, coming to us from his regular old non-fancy pants recording room.
I just want to know, does Cleveland rock?
I think so. I want to believe it.
Okay. That makes me feel better.
I have faith.
It's not too much hype, right?
Stuck here in the house.
I don't think so. Okay. I'll get exposed more to the Rocky of Cleveland as the week progresses.
Okay. Just, you know, try to keep a cynic's hat on and don't let them woo you too much with their t-shirts.
Right.
All right. Well, we are here today.
Cleveland don't care.
Cleveland don't care. I can't say the other one. The other one would be more blunt. We're here to talk to you about Hard Knocks, the new episode of Transformers Prime. Somebody is rolling around outside in the alleyway by my window with, like, a friggin' wheelbarrow. It's crazy.
Just don't park in it.
Yeah, that's right. The Rainer learned the hard way. Yeah, that was a bummer. Anyway, Hard Knocks, this is the episode that the description's the one we've been laughing about for two prime times now, because it's like, Knockout gets a sonic gun, and Starscream plays with Red Energon. So this episode was pretty multifaceted. It had multiple sets, scenes, and sequences, and a pretty big thing at the end. So I'm not sure. Do you guys want to just dive into the massive reveal at the end of the episode to kick us off?
Sure.
That's the big talking point. So we're seeing the decryption of the Iacon relic locations and whatnot, and suddenly the data starts to form into an image of some kind, and they're like, what's going on? Is this another layer of decryption? And then the image turns into a picture of Smokescreen, which means that right after an episode kind of dedicated to kind of beating down poor Smokescreen and going like, yo, guess what? Destiny ain't nothing, you newbie. It turns out he very well may be the fourth Omega Key himself, meaning that his destiny is pretty damn big. That also explains why he was knocked out and shot into space. I imagine that he was guarding the door, and he saw Decepticons about to come in, and then Alphatron walked up behind him and just friggin' blackjacked him in the back of the head and threw him into a tube, and then shot him at the Earth. I'm sure that's not actually what happened, but I like the idea that Alphatron went like, hey, could you just stand over here for a second? And thwam! It's blackout. And then, of course, Smokescreen had just driven out of the base at that very moment, and is found just in time to be seen being sonic boomed and dragged into a ground bridge by Soundwave, ending us on quite a cliffhanger and a bit of a downer. So, how'd you guys feel about this revelation on Smokescreen? Gog, this is kind of like throwing a small monkey wrench into the MacGuffin search. As it turns out, one of these things we're looking for has been there the whole time.
Yeah, I don't know. We're going to have to wait and see how this plays out, because outside of the final Iacon coordinate decode, like I said before, like, it's like, I don't care about the particulars that much of the Iacon stuff. Just the fact that this is the confirmation that this is the final one. So it's over. Like, mm-hmm. no more Iacon decoding for an entire season.
And
so I'm like, just that alone makes me fairly happy overall.
Two keys were solved in this episode as well. They didn't drag it out.
Yeah. So how many episodes do we have left? Three after this? Or which episode number was this?
Now I can't remember.
Well, whatever. Somebody can look it up. But like, so I don't know. I mean, it depends on how this plays out. Like, I'm not going to judge it before anything happens because I don't know. I mean, they could do something cool with it. It's, I don't think just the action of making smokescreen something to do with the keys is necessarily bad. One thing I am kind of worried about is smokescreen's fate because, like, this entire season, you know, like, his whole thing has been like, yeah, I want to be a great Autobot and I want to be a great leader one day. And, you know, like, it's my destiny to do great things. And it just, it really seems like they're kind of playing up perhaps an early death for this guy.
Yeah. And I'm
kind of going to be surprised if he survives the end of this season. Like, no joke. And mm-hmm. like, that's kind of the bummer for me because it just seems like, yeah, we got this new character and stuff. And, I think that's something that Prime has really needed. And I don't hate Smokescreen. I think he's kind of young and obnoxious. But like I said, I think there's positives to that when you contrast it to the other characters in a way. As long as he shows some sort of growth, which I think he has to a degree. I don't really think he's resetting. Like, he wasn't going out all Maverick. It's just, like, the only thing that he really did that was quote-unquote wrong in this episode was just, like, what he was saying, you know?
Like, yeah, he went from being a Maverick to being, yeah. like, such a team player. He's like, come on, team, we gotta do better.
Right, right. He's still kind of obnoxious, but he's not running through the space bridge to get the key, you know, when nobody's looking, so...
Yeah.
You know, so, like, you know, I don't have a problem necessarily with Smokescreen. And I do think that... But I think that's the thing that I'm worried about most, is if he does... If this arc does result in his death, or at least his being permanently removed from the cast in some way, I think overall that hurts the show because it just kind of dumps things right back to the where they were instead of continuing to explore this guy. And maybe instead of us being on episode 20 or whatever of season 2, fast forward to episode 20 of season 3, you know, between point A and point B, you have some interesting opportunities to tell some story and show some character growth. And, you know, so I don't know. And again, like I get on these kind of monologues about like, yeah, like this sets up a great opportunity to do this and it never happens. So maybe I should just stop getting my hopes up for any of that stuff.
Well, at least the thing is with Smokescreen, he is a good kind of teenage-y style character. He wants to impress everybody. That's why he wants to be the big warrior. And so there are a lot of people that poo-poo on him because he's that enthusiasm or whatever, but at the same time you go, well, no, what's the aim of this character?
Right.
He's somebody that has been, you know, sidelined basically for all of this great war, and he wants to, you know, he's got his friggin' idol there, and he's trying to show that he's worthy to be with this idol character. You know, this guy that he looked up to before and everything. So that's where I get irate right. with the people that think that he's a bad character. No, he's actually a very good character.
Well, he has
for
the potential.
What the character
he has the potential
is.
To be a very good character. Because that's the thing, like good characters, I think they show growth. So if you have someone start off as this incredibly flawed, annoying being, but you show a growth between point A and point B that he has the potential to be the best character.
Right.
And I've seen people arguing about, like, well, why do you love Smokescreen but you hate Miko? Because in a lot of ways they're the same. And it's hard to argue with that, but I think that at least speaking for me, or maybe us, I'm not sure, but, like, I think one of the reasons why we have poo-pooed so much on Miko is the fact that she doesn't show any growth. Like, it's just the same thing over and over again. Every once in a while, you get this glimpse of something really awesome. Like, whatever that rock episode was it Hard Rock or...
Hard Rock Solid Underneath.
Rock Solid. Rock Solid. Whatever it was. But, like, that was a great episode for Miko. And she's had little bits and pieces here and there where it's like, wow, like, there's so much potential with her. And... You know, she just resets every episode. And so, like, I don't have a problem with Miko. I have a problem with Miko not ever changing. Like, because Miko could be an amazing character if they would explore these little bits that, I mean, they do it every once in a while. And if they made that, I think, a bigger thing, then it would be great. And maybe they just don't want to do that. Maybe that's just the way Miko is, and that's the personality they want on the show, and they don't want to go anywhere else with it. If that's where the way they're going to go, then that's their show, you know, fine. But I think it's a poor decision myself. But, you know, I think that's what we see with Smokescreen, again, is that potential. Because, like, he shows up on Earth. He has no idea how to interact with humans, doesn't really regard anybody's safety. And, like, seeing him go from that to maybe, you know, a more mature character after a season or two, like, I think that he has a potential to be really, really great.
What I like about him so far is he's also been not like outright apologetic, but he seems to be aware of the consequences of what he does. Yeah. And he doesn't seem to reject the notion that those consequences are there, right. which is what I like about him quite a bit. He seems like an actual, like, as a flawed, obnoxious youngster character, he also seems a little bit more real in that he's like, when someone tells him off, he's like, oh, I'm sorry about that. Like, you know, he's kind of, he's not coming up with reasons why he's right.
Right. But he also, like, he showed a great deal of immaturity in this episode because RC scolded him. Maybe she was a little harsh, but she didn't say anything that was wrong. You know, and, like, Optimus stepped in and said, you know, you've said enough. And she's like, no, he needs to hear this. And she laid it out for him black and white. But she also, you know, told him that we need a teammate. Like, be the teammate that we need. Like, don't, you know, stop keeping score. Stop worrying about you doing, you know, epic things inscribed in your destiny, and just be a member of our team that we need. You know, and his response to that is, well, maybe I just can't, and just drives away. And, that shows a great deal of immaturity. Like, but that doesn't mean that you should dislike the character for that. That's just the potential for him to become an even better character down the road. But, you know, so, but, like, that's my, like, all that said, all of that said, it's all going to mean nothing if the end of the season he just dies. Because, if that was to happen, I know what they're doing from the writer's perspective. It's him saying, like, oh, I have big destiny. Oh, well, maybe I don't have a destiny after all. I'm no better than anybody else. Oh, look, I found my destiny. End of story arc. And that's that would be really, really unfortunate.
I think that there is a way it could work if they kill him off, because they have four episodes to go. If he is done at the end of this season, there's a way it could work if he is still going to feature in every episode from this point onwards, because that way we will have had, like, what, 7 or 8 solid episodes of Smokescreen. And so if we get that many episodes with him being at least a medium-level focus point in it, then I think they could pull off a decent little character arc that, you know, it would be a bummer to get rid of him, because I think he's got a lot of potential, too. But if it at least ends well, then I'd be okay with that. It would be a shame, but because I also like Nolan North a lot. But maybe I just have my voice actor bias going on. Aaron, what's your opinion on the destiny of Smokescreen?
Well, first, one thing that I had a kind of stand back, slap my forehead for a little bit. Do you think that his name was maybe a tongue-in-cheek joke?
Yeah, pretty enormously. Yeah. Once they did the reveal, I was like, okay, okay.
Yeah.
We all had our laugh.
Yeah. So I saw that. So that was, exactly the ha-ha. No, I think, like what I was saying with Gog and what he's been saying is pretty close to where I hit. I don't know. Part of it might be some of the things I've been reading. I've went through and read some of Will Wheaton's writings and how he was written as Wesley Crusher as a character. That's one of those things you can only do so much, and reading angsty stuff and thinking, well, if you think about Smokescreen as, you know, he's a teenager, as Prime, I think, puts it in this episode or the last episode, as a titan among these humans, you know, he's wanting to go out there and do this stuff and show off and be great amongst all these great people, and having to realize that maybe he's not going to be great out of the gate. And then when RC did her turn on him, and RC was right in her way, and I think it was done well. That, you know, Prime was like, hey, maybe, you know, maybe that's been enough. And she says, no, you know, he needs to hear the whole thing. Both her and Prime have the right of it, kind of. But it's something that, you know, Prime maybe saw that, look, you've pushed this kid up to the breaking point, and he's okay, you took it too far. And so then that's when he bugs off, and away it goes. And it's one of those things that, again, it didn't seem, I mean, to a point, you know, that it's written to set up the where the story goes with it. But, you know, you do see where it makes sense, because I know I, as a teenager, if I had somebody coming down on me, I had a real strong drive just to say, screw this, I'm going to go to my room and read a book or whatever and get out of this people yelling at me, because I tried to do what I thought was best for the situation, you know. Mm-hmm. I guess I can really see where all of his reactions come from that sometimes you don't see in some of the characters. You know, last week, RC, when she thought Smokescreen was dead, I thought for RC the thing that would make sense is rage, not all of a sudden, boom, I'm giving up. You know, you see these kind of off-character reactions to see what, again, like what I said, you know, what I see... quasi teenager kid getting yelled at by the people that he looks up to and admires or whatever. Yeah, I can definitely see the reaction being, well, screw this, I'm gonna go not be around these people that are angry.
I think that my reaction to it was kind of the sheer bullet pointed timing of it kind of made me go, oh, a little bit. Just because I think it was just so like television of like, all right, he's run out of the room, and we just found out he's the last Omega Key. We better go get him.
Yeah, well, and part of that also is because that happens in the last, like, 3 minutes of the episode. I mean, they ran through...
And the laser beak happens to be flying around the area for once in a way that we've never heard about before.
That happens in the last minute and a half of the episode.
And it's like, well, it's a good thing we sent Laserbeak out to that desert where we think they are, because we happen to see the last Omega Key driving away after he got angry, and Soundwave happens to have his sonic blaster. We'll just find him and blow him away.
at least the interstory logic of, you know, they know that they've got to be around Jasper. Yeah. You know, they have been kind of narrowing in on this, and they know that, you know, oh, yeah, okay, decodes, these last three decodes have been record time. And all these things. It is a little bit of nod, but at the same time,
like, I don't dislike it.
This was a quick-paced, yet well-paced episode, because this could have been three episodes with the way it had been rolling before.
It also kind of played off of the human factor when they had to, like, they stated that they had to relocate Raph's family because the Decepticons learned the location of his house. So to me, this almost felt like a Megatron realized, oh, well, this is where the kids are. The kids are with the Autobots. They've got to be around here somewhere. Let's start scouting the area for evidence of where their base is.
Yeah, and it just did real well for them.
Right, and I think if you look at it as an extension of that, like it actually does make sense, I think, in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, yeah. It took me out for a sec just because of the... It was a very plot-convenient way to put things together, which I don't dislike, as I said. Like, I don't think it's really bad. It's just something that does stick out to me in the moment where I'm kind of like, oh, and then I always kind of prefer it when things feel kind of more coalesced rather than like rushing together in a somewhat predetermined way. It just all felt a little bit overdestined for the moment at hand.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. See, yeah, you get it, because Smokescreen's a destined one. Yeah, but I really am enjoying what they've done with Smokescreen. I don't mind this whole thing of making him into the Omega Key. I think it nicely covers up the reason why he would just black out and find himself being shot towards the planet Earth. And I kind of dug it. I mean, we have four episodes to see how it played out, but as a potential, I'm really enjoying it. And I did actually like the whole lack of security that was introduced in this episode of, like, the other two keys have been accounted for. The Decepticons got one, the Autobots have one, Starscream has one, and now the Decepticons unknowingly have the fourth. They don't, because they don't really seem to know what the keys are for, but Starscream does know what the keys are for. I think that they've set up a really cool, just like, since there's only four episodes left to play with, they set up a really nice little web of, like, everyone knows half of something, but nobody next to each other knows two halves of something. And it should be pretty interesting. I mean, we've seen from the descriptions that one of the next episodes is all about something something, which we'll probably talk about at the end. We actually have a whole lot of spoilery stuff we could talk about at the end. There was an interview that went up, which was probably more suited to this podcast than the regular WTF podcast. But, I want to see what they do with this. And I just hope that whatever happens, you know, we are going to get a Smokescreen figure from Japan, so I'm happy about that. I would just like it if Smokescreen could stick around long enough to perhaps get toyified in the States as well. But Smokescreen aside, like, we're going to see what they do with him. He's probably going to be a huge focus for the next little while, unless we lose him immediately. I don't know. I really hope that doesn't happen, because that would be a shame. That would be a Silas-level shame, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't know. What's another part of the episode you want to talk about? GOG, another talking point.
Lots happened in this. I don't know. Let's talk about what was the first one they did? I guess Knockout getting the sound wave emitter thing.
Yeah.
Knockout kind of just walking up with it, going like, "Hey, can I use this?"
Yeah. So, and it was interesting too, because he had mentioned that he borrowed it from Soundwave, and then by the end of the episode, Soundwave had it again. So I thought that was neat, but it almost, I don't know, I wonder if that is going to be Soundwave's quote unquote signature weapon, which would be more than fitting for a guy named Soundwave.
Soundwave,
but,
yeah.
But there's even a line about it.
Right. I thought the use of the device was interesting. Like he was pushing Bumblebee up against the wall so hard it was cracking his frame. But then, like, he needed to deal with both of them, so he just set the frequency lower and, like, emitted bass like a subwoofer. Like, it was interesting. So instead of it just being like a ripple laser, like from Gradius or something, but
yeah,
but I don't know. Like, so it was simple, but. It was neat. I get like we had talked about before. It was neat seeing those some of those older relics come back into play instead of it just being something that's, you know, a plot
thrown
device
a
for an
room.
Episode and then thrown away like the majority of them have been. So.
Mm-hmm. Aaron, any thoughts on the sonic emitter that you might have had yourself?
It was definitely interesting to see different modes of it, and so I don't know if that is something that just the good doctor figured out or what, but then also just the power of it. I mean, because that cracked Bumblebee's chest armor area, and I had to pause it once or twice to catch just the sheer look of surprise pain out of Bumblebee as it happened. It was a good type of motion, and to see that impact later, because Bumblebee still had that at the end as they were jumping out of the space bridge for Smokescreen. For some observed continuity there.
Ooh. I had not noticed that. I should have been looking for that. I really think that the sonic emitter is yet another really easy. Make this and print it off in a 3D printer. Make a mold and cast like a few hundred of them. Third-party release that could happen. Because it practically was mounting onto mech tech points on those guys. Like, it looked like a either 5mm peg hole or 3mm clip weapon, the way that it was attached to Soundwave and Knockout.
Well, with Soundwave, it'd be easy enough to just have a thin part, because it just clips on the side of his hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have a Knockout. Really
Knockout's got the door frame stuff all around his arm.
Yeah.
So just clip on there.
Yeah, so come on. Come on, Shapeways people. What are you doing?
Yeah, hey, Shapeways. Hey, Dr. Wu. I've actually realized Dr. Wu's prime stuff that we've been seeing lots of pictures of, it's all still in development. None of it's actually out yet. Like, the last things he put out were the Matrix sword and the maskless Optimus face. So I want to see a sonic emitter now too. I want it. I am entitled. I want it.
You gotta start making the pouty face and really bring it home.
You can't see what I'm doing over here, but I'm busting that out.
Ew.
Yeah, that's right. Bustin'. it out. Yeah, the Sonic Emitter was very cool to see once again. And I like the idea of it being used smartly as well. Like the whole widespread or subwoof shockwave or concentrated burst. Right. And it did lead to a line that I got lots of tweets about where people tweeted me without telling me what the line was, which meant that now I was completely ready for the line. So, you know, that's that doesn't help me very much. But the line was, who knew that sound waves could be such a knockout? And the way Darren Norris delivered that line made it work. So I liked that line. Suck it, everybody, who told me, hey, guess what? There's a pun in Prime that Knockout says, get ready for it. Well, guess what? I actually liked it. So your whole plan fell apart. Ha! Sonic Emitter. Aaron, have you got a talking point?
Well, we can just move on to the next battle then.
Yes.
Bulkhead and Dreadwing, basically.
Yeah.
That was cool.
And that had some of the really good, what's a TV show that did that a bunch? Leverage. If you've ever seen that, where they kind of do the pause the action but move the camera through moments just to, like, get to see the other side of combat as it's happening and things like that. And seeing them burn down the whole forest in the middle of this fight scene, basically, with the over-exposition-y explosives.
I enjoyed Dreadwing's arrival and then just kind of flying by and like, what's up with him? And there's bombs on every tree!
Yeah.
There's a lot of collateral damage.
Yeah, which, but then it was odd, like, why not instead of, you know, mining the whole forest, why don't you just go get that key?
Because he hasn't used his bombs for, like, several episodes, so he's got a whole bunch built up that he could... I kind of enjoyed the return of the Dreadwing time bomb. I forgot he had those.
Yeah. Well, then I also really did like the fact that it was, and that was another case of I was then watching for it, of he tossed a bomb on Bulkhead's back, and I was watching, and I think it was the first time that you see Bulkhead's back, it's still there, but then after that, it was gone.
Yeah, I noticed it was gone, and I was like, what?
Yeah, he does a bear hug and then slams Dreadwing into the tree, and then the next shot, he doesn't have it. But in that shot where he slams him against the tree, you can't see Bulkhead's back, and you can't see his hands. So it's another. Yeah. It was kind of like the whole phase shifter thing where they subtly just made Smokescreen watch it and didn't call any attention to it until like the big reveal at the end. Like it was kind of the same thing here where, so it's neat because you look at stuff like that and you're like, wait, is that an animation error? And you're like, oh no, like that was plot. So,
right.
Like,
well, that was what I thought right off the bat was, animate. Come on, guys, come on. And then it was, oh, well that makes sense. Then.
Yeah. I felt the same thing. I'm like, oh, they didn't animate it.
And just because he had that moment of, oh, you haven't learned. Yes, I have. Good, excellent face close up. And then, what? Uh-oh. Yeah. But then it was the odd of he was like scrambling to get at where the handle for his weapon is anyway. Little niggles. But it was very, very well paced and laid out for a fight scene. That wasn't the, which Prime hasn't been as bad of the stand back and kind of shoot at each other style fight scene.
Oh no, Prime's been good at its fight choreography. I found that's I mean, you can hear it in older Prime times. That's one of my big sticking good points of the show is that I feel excited most of the time when they have action moments. Yeah, I was kind of sitting there going like, hey, maybe, yo, Dreadwing, maybe think about putting a dead man switch or something on those. Yeah. Those bombs next time.
Or just like have proximity of, oh, it's on me. Nope.
Because I was like, you hit the button that turned the bomb on. You know, maybe next time, just think about it. Maybe put a little button in there that makes it stop being on. It's just a suggestion, sir. But I enjoyed that fight scene a lot. Gog, how'd you feel about Dreadwing getting back in the action a little bit?
Nah, I like Dreadwing. Yeah. Like I said, the only thing that's a bit silly is it's like Dreadwing should probably shave about 5 seconds off the timers on the bombs.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's a good thing he didn't because he'd be dead right now. But then again, if he hadn't, then Bulkhead and Smokescreen wouldn't have survived the initial explosion. So he would have been all right. So I guess my point stands. So other than that, just it being really convenient for those bombs to everyone to just slightly get away just in time. Like, you know, outside of that, I mean, it's it was fine. But I liked the battle because it showed Dreadwing and Bulkhead both being very skilled in what they do. Like, you know, them rushing to each other and Bulkhead swinging and then Smokescreen just doing a parry of his wrecking ball, like just kind of brushing it aside. It's like, oh, that's cool. And then, you know, Bulkhead again, like doing like the back swing, which would have probably knocked any other character out instantly. You know, Dreadwing just kind of, again, just dodge and boom, hitting his shoulders. And, well, yeah, Bulkhead did win in the end. Like, it was, like, that was a pretty good fight. Like, Dreadwing got some really good hits on him. So,
yeah,
I'm a fan of Dreadwing. I hope to see, again, more. I think Dreadwing is a really interesting character that, again, I think really needs to be explored. I would have loved to see more. I mean, the few Dreadwing character moments we got, like his intro into the show and then him temporarily teaming up with Optimus to take out, to fight Apex Armor Starscream. And then, what was it? The battle at the end of the episode where Breakdown died, where Dreadwing goes, I forget the name of it.
Is that Armada?
No, the one right before. It was the one before that.
Oh, right.
But, everybody knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But, so, like those have all, like, those are moments that I thought Dreadwing, like, I really enjoy his character. He's good. So, hopefully they will continue to explore that in some form, other than him just, you know, randomly mentioning his dead brother every once in a while.
My brother, so. Skyquake, is dead, you know!
Well, Megatron's the one that brought it up last time.
Yeah, yeah.
That jerk.
Yeah. Hey, Dreadwing, listen. Your twin brother's dead. Just so you know. Be filled with hatred! Yeah, I actually felt like a little bit of the ways into this season, especially once we came back to season two. I felt like we'd been kind of getting shortchanged on Dreadwing. And I was like, is Tony Todd busy or something? Like, what's going on? So I'm glad to see Dreadwing back in the forefront, as it were. What else happened? Oh! Let's talk about everyone's favorite plot device returning after a brief break from the screen. Red Energon! Starscream having this wonderful line, which to me kind of almost redeemed the very existence of Red Energon for the sake of a one-liner, which is the fact that apparently it takes an incredibly long time to distill and you get almost nothing out of a giant piece of it. Which I kind of enjoyed. Just poor Starscream, once again, he gets something cool, and it sucks, and then he's like, well, I see Decepticon activity, I'm gonna go get a much better weapon, and the thing he gets is entirely not a weapon. So, yeah. Poor guy, and he said that he only had enough for one, maybe two doses of Red Energon. That means that, you know, after his next appearance, if not before, that whole thing's gonna probably be gone. Poor Starscream.
Well, but, I actually like that because then it just takes that, you know, again, we complain about MacGuffins and things that the Red Energon was, and that basically makes it moot.
He's no
used
problem.
The one dose. There might be another one, and there's also great, I don't know if comedy's the full on, but there was a good chuckle out of that, and then plus just watching him as like each drops is almost like when you're taunting your pet with food. You've got your dog and you're just like bloop, just like hope and sad.
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of been enjoying the whole Cosmos despises Starscream thing that's been going on, only because like Steve Bloom is doing such a good job voicing a lot of that stuff. And and also, if there is a plot device that would be nullified after one or two uses, I do not mind that it is Red Energon. So, you know, it can...
Well, that, and then the super speed, because this is like Flash levels of super speed, where it's not just like, hey, he's kind of hard to hit, but he's basically invisible because he's so fast.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets deep into kind of God mode-y, where it's just, what's the point in fighting it at that?
Well, the point in fighting it is to get your own score of Red Energon, or to get the yellow Energon that slows down the Red Energon. I did some research. Gog, how'd you feel about the Starscream moments in this episode?
It was good. Like I said, I don't know. I just need to get a pre-recorded statement, I think. And I'm just like, whenever I get, like, whenever the situation arises, I just hit like F12 on my computer and it plays. Well, you know, Chris, how I feel about this individual situation is I think the character is great. He is just underused and I would like to see more development in him. And you'll just hear that about 5 times an episode. I can just lean back in the chair and just hit the button and just like, so Gog, what did you think about Dreadwing? So Gog, what did you think about Starscream in this episode? So Gog,
what did you think about the crisis in the Middle East? Well, there's good characters, but I
needs a better plot. So yeah, like I mean, this does put Starscream back in the role of being important in some aspect, because like, well, when was the last time he was important? I guess when he helped the Autobots a couple times, where he was, you know, he was calling them and begging for med kits and stuff, and like he got the Apex armor, and everybody was just like, okay, well, I guess Starscream has Apex armor now, but he's at the bottom of the ocean, so let's go home, guys. And now he has one of the Omega keys in his possession, so,
and he actually knows what they are,
right? And he's the only Decepticon who knows what they are. I mean, mm-hmm. Well, I guess not really a Decepticon anymore, but
he's the only non-Autobot
who knows what they are. Now someone besides the Autobots know what they are. Megatron still doesn't. So we'll see how this plays. So yeah, it could be interesting, but, yeah, I don't know. It's like, I guess it's still kind of funny that Starscream all this time has gotten a transformation cog and still just doesn't have the balls to install it.
Yeah.
it's kind of from a writing perspective, like, because like it's almost the opposite of some of my other complaints. Cuz like other things I complain, it's like I say that, oh, the writing staff just they introduced this thing, this point, and then just instantly resolved it without there being any consequence. And but it's here, it's like they kind of resolved it, but now this end part of him just being too afraid to put it back in his body for the pain that it will induce, like that's just causing this whole thing with Starscream to drag on way longer than it should have. So that in itself to me is kind of amusing. Because it's like the writers already kind of wrote that out. Like, well, he got his transformation cog yet, but for the rest of the season, he just doesn't have the balls to put it back in. So he's still going to kind of be pathetic. And if you think about it, that kind of really is pathetic. But so
poor guy.
Like that. Yeah. So we'll see. I thought Starscream started off this season really strong. They actually made me feel sympathetic for the character, which I thought was brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
He filled that role for a while, and now, I like Starscream, but like his, like I was saying before, the moments when he's on screen, where it used to be like for me, like I was just biting my nails, like, oh man, here's Starscream, what's gonna happen? Now it's just kind of like, okay, well, what is he gonna do? Because he hasn't really done a whole lot lately.
Well, here's Starscream, what's going to happen to him?
Right. Yeah. So yeah, we'll see. He's finally in an interesting position again this season. So how that's we're obviously edging close to the end game. Aaron was nice enough to look it up, and we have 4 episodes left in the season, which almost certainly are going to entirely revolve around the Omega keys and Smokescreen for the remainder of the season. Now that we're in this final arc, so yeah, we'll have to wait and see how Starscream plays into that. So
cool.
We'll see. Yeah, but I enjoyed his lines, like him just watching the drops fall, and just you can just see the rage in his face. Like it was more than amusing.
All right. Moving on from Starscream, who we'll probably see more of as well. Aaron, have you got another talking point you'd like to bring up?
Not a ton. I mean, we kind of pushed through all of the big points. Not really. I'm just looking at my list, and the only other thing I have is a repeat of what Proto Man had to say on Twitter. Just rename Smokescreen as Hot Rod.
I kind of am enjoying the mass unintentional trolling of Dear Young Daniel. We've got a guy literally called the Destined One, who is not called Hot Rod. So sorry. We'll try again.
Yeah.
I like that Smokescreen gets to be important, because I actually don't remember any of the character traits of many previous characters called Smokescreen.
He was a gambler?
Most Smokescreens have just been redecos of other characters.
Just a redeco of Prowl.
Yeah. So now we have a Smokescreen who matters. Rejoice. It's a good name. So I'm glad to see it used so well. And like I said, this has been just between his portrayal and the voice and the storyline he's got going on, unless something really, like some kind of ball just plummets off the edge of the cliff, which I kind of don't think they could do to the degree I'm talking about. I'm super excited for that damn pre-order page for Smokescreen to actually go up somewhere so I can pre-order a Smokescreen. Gog, have you got any talking points left?
I can't really think of anything that we haven't talked about.
There is the whole thing of Knockout and Megatron, I think more so than ever before, kind of starting to talk about his role as a non-combatant. Like, referring to him as Doctor constantly, and, like this episode, he literally says, "Like I'm happy for you and whatnot, but I value your scientific skill a lot more than your being able to shoot people with noise. So if you could go and study what this key is, please." And this kind of feels like a bit of a resentment that Knockout's starting to feel.
Yeah, well, it's funny because Megatron just laughs off at, that he could even be a contribution after everything else. Yeah. I guess that is a point that I didn't really write down, but then he's like, "Well, you sure the Autobots didn't make up a fake for you?"
Yeah, that was great. He's literally like, "Well, you got the key, but you got the key. Might be a fake, might be a bomb. Knowing you, they probably tricked you." Yeah, it was some fun stuff. There was a nice little bit of I always enjoy it, but there was some Knockout content, and I felt that there was some. A little bit of meat in it to chew on. So it made me happy. I'm trying to think of anything else that comes to mind. Megatron gloating a whole lot to Soundwave, who can't say anything in response, was kind of fun. Where he's like, "You should have seen him when I busted the Star Saber up. It shattered like glass." And I was like, "Is that a reference to something?" But, yeah, I can't think of anything else now off the top of my head. Do you guys want to talk about the Stephen Melching interview that Geekcast Radio did?
Sure.
We have some bullet points about it. All right.
I read the bullet points. I didn't listen to the actual interview, but I read the bullet points.
I haven't had time to listen to it either, but we could cover some of the bullet points. Ladies and gentlemen, if you do not want to hear anything else about Transformers Prime other than our thoughts on Hard Knocks, thank you for listening. I mean, speaking for myself, Hard Knocks, I had fun watching it. I went in more or less just expecting some good old prime time, and that's pretty much what I got. So, I didn't mind that episode. Looking forward to seeing what they do with Smokescreen, and we're about to talk about
it. It was a bit of a setup episode, I think, for the rest of the arc.
Yeah.
Which is fine. It didn't feel like filler. It was all stuff that needed to happen, and a lot happened, but it was, I think, setting this final arc in motion. So, it was fine. It wasn't anything spectacular, but it was not a bad episode. We've certainly had much worse this season.
Yeah, I felt okay about it. I'd actually watch it again quite happily, hopefully on Blu-ray when I watch everything else again on Blu-ray. But we're about to talk about an interview about not only the end of season 2, but some info on season 3. So. I just coughed. If you don't want to hear about that, you have a couple seconds to get away. Get away. Run across the room. Turn off this podcast. I know you're lying in bed listening to it. You've got to get up. You need to wake up, John. Wake up. Get over here, John. Turn off the podcast, John. We're about to ruin everything. Okay, that should have given them enough time. So this is Stephen Melching.
There's one person named John that is freaking out right now.
John, wake up! Stephen Melching did an interview with Geekcast Radio, and he raised a couple of points. One of them, apparently, he brought up is that apparently the writing team, or at least this guy who's a writer of several episodes, not only Transformers Prime, but also Beast Machines, apparently there is an awareness of the omnipresent status quo, which I thought was a nice way of putting it, in a very concise, like, you know, very few words kind of way. Some other points he brought up is apparently we have not seen the last of Synth N, which is something that I know we've brought up at least two times since season two began on this podcast. Apparently, this guy also wrote the season two finale, and will be writing five episodes of season three. Let's see. Marsha Griffin, who apparently wrote Transformers Animated Endgame Part 2, is also going to be writing five episodes of season three. So that's like, they're each writing about a third of season three from what we, from what we've heard. Season two apparently will not end well for the Autobots. The big question going into season three is how they get out of the situation they find themselves in. So I'm guessing this is going to be our Empire Strikes Back kind of deal. Season three is going to have a totally new setting with no status quo. Depending on how that relates to the omnipresent status quo bit at the top of the article, that could be a pretty cool thing. And apparently Stephen Melching would be fine if season three was the end of the series, because going into the series, they knew how they wanted it to end, and apparently that's how season three is going to end. So that's also interesting to hear. So curious about, just on those bullet points, some of your guys' thoughts. Gog?
Yeah. I mean, it makes me wonder with this, too, because I should probably listen to the interview, so, you know, take everything I say with the understanding that I haven't, but I do plan on going back and listening to that, and maybe we can talk about it in depth if we feel like there's anything that comes across differently in the actual interview that's not portrayed in the bullet points. But, like, I want to know if this is any type of reaction to, or if this is reaction to fan reaction.
The interview responses?
Well, yeah, like him saying that, you know, there's going to be no status quo. Like, I wonder if that is just how season three is going to play out, or if that is as a result of people saying that we don't like the fact that everything resets every couple of episodes and there's never any real consequence. So them making a concentrated effort to say, like, okay, we are going to try and mix things up a little bit, due to that feedback, or if this is just all a coincidence, because it seemed like this question was provided to him in the form of, hey, did you know that this is a complaint that a lot of fans have, and him saying, yes, I know we're going to solve it, or if, oh, well, you know, yeah, things in season three will work differently this time, so we think those people might be more satisfied. But, you know, so I don't know. I'm just curious to know if that's actually due to feedback they received, or if it's just a coincidence in him saying that, like, if you didn't like the status quo, quote unquote, of the first two seasons, then you'll be more pleased with the third. So I don't know. Season two not ending well, like, I think that's fine, as long as it sets up something for them to work towards, you know, because if you want to be, you know what, technically, guess what? Season one didn't end well either. They beat Unicron, but Optimus Prime lost his memories and was taken by the Decepticons.
That was a good ending too.
Right. But you know, so that didn't end well either. And that kind of led into like three pretty decent episodes, or at least two decent ones and one that was kind of okay. So, and then I guess, yeah, it kind of set up the whole Iacon thing, but, yeah, so we'll see. But I mean, I hope that this plants the seed for just something big that we can work towards and have something meaningful instead of, you know, let's search for the relics, which I am going to give them the benefit of the doubt now and assume that whole thing is over. Because the Iacon, all that stuff has been decoded. It's over. It's done. Final coordinates. Let's move on. So, but as long as that's the case, then, yeah, I think I'll be happy. I mean, yeah, I guess there's nothing else to really say at that point. I mean, since then, yeah, we'll see. Like I said, if I remember correctly, last time we saw it was
at the end of that episode, Knockout had gotten some from Ratchet, I guess, right?
Yeah, he got a drop, right. Some drops of it.
Yeah. So if the Decepticons start utilizing that as a weapon, then that could be cool, but hopefully it just doesn't turn into the Insecticon thing where it's like, oh, here's the new big bad, oh my god, and then, you know, after two or three episodes, it's just like, boom, boom, our guns look like they're shooting a little harder, and we're just shooting them out of the sky.
I have created Red Synthen!
Oh, god.
Aaron, any thoughts on the bullet points from the interview yourself?
Again, it's until we actually see how Synthen is dealt with. I mean, okay, we've not seen the last of it, but that does that mean that it ends up in Knockout's laboratory? You know, I don't know. It's always the vagaries of an interview, and I can only really tell you so much, but by saying these things that, you know, yes, that Energon does factor into the... Well, of course Energon factors in, because that's what Transformers run on. You know, there are plenty of ways that what they're saying can be seen other ways, and I'm trying not to get too excited over possibilities and might-bes and could-bes. It's any interview done to increase awareness of a brand, of making it sound like the neatest, bestest, coolest thing that you've ever seen, ever.
A cursory glance at the discussion thread shows me that a whole lot of people are peeling open every single thing they can get from this information.
Yeah.
Also, apparently there's a notable number of people who totally want RC and Bulkhead to die. I didn't know that.
There are plenty of people that want every character to die.
Well, guess what?
They can either have their own favorite character, or lack of characters means that the show will now be over and we don't have to live through it anymore.
Guess what? You're not going to ever get rid of my Jeffrey Combs, because yeah.
Because yeah.
The Prime Forum! Ba-da! Yeah, I still need to check out that interview as well. I've not had time to sit down and listen to it, but I felt like it was something that would be more pertinent to talk about a little bit on here than on the regular numbered episodes. I also have a listener question for us that Axion Prime sent in, and I subsequently put into the other queue, hence why I did not actually bring it up last episode. So my apologies. I'm horrible. However, Axion Prime, who sent this in on June 11th, says, "Hello, Vangelis and the gang. This is Axion bringing you another primetime listener question. Given that by the time you all get to this, the mid-season break will be over, how about some ideas about the season finale? I know you guys won't get much time to mull this over, so I'll make it specific. What specific aspect, storyline, plot point, character, or other would you like to see in the season finale? You can just choose one, but I really just want to know what you guys would like to see happen, revealed, or so forth in the season finale that would make it for you. Axion Prime, personally, would like to see Prime versus Soundwave and the return of Unicron. All right, thanks, everybody." So ends the question. I mean, going in with what we know, I would like them to hang on to the Soundwave voice thing if they can. That would be nice. I'd love to see Shockwave show up. That would be interesting. Those are really two main things. I would just like to see, if Smokescreen's story does end this season, I would like to see it end in a way that has a nice back cover to the book of his story, if this is going to be where his story ends. If not, then hey, let's continue it on, baby. But that's kind of what I'm looking for. I want some nice satisfying conclusions, and I want some cool reveals. That would be neat. Aaron, what are you looking for in the season finale?
Wow. I'd like to see something resolve positively. So we've got the keys. I'd like to see maybe Cybertron get reset, see kind of a Beast Machines-ish ending without the, well, what goes on now? You know, maybe that's with everything else that's going on, you know, maybe that's what progresses the story. Okay, well, they're getting away from Earth, and out in the world, because now Cybertron's rebuilt, and maybe it folds back into the some of the other aligned continuity stuff of finding Velocitron, like what happens in the most recent book, I think, and things like that of the Transformers that are out in the world and get away from Earth. I think that can take us places that that we've not seen yet. And be able to get away from some of the eye-rolly, oh, of course everything's on Earth. Well, now you're out and about looking for things. So if you stumble across some other thing, then it makes sense because you're out looking for it, not just it happened to fall on Earth.
Cool. And Gog, what are you looking for in the season finale?
I don't want it to turn out like it did with Unicron, where it's just like, oh, here's this thing, and it's big, and it's bad, and now we're just gonna act like it didn't happen afterwards. Like, I want the season finale to have consequences, both plot-wise, like, to shake up, you know, it's a word that I think has been used a lot, but I do think that the status quo does need to be shaken up a bit. Like, I don't want season 3 just to be like, here's the Autobots at the base. Here's yada, yada, yada going to happen to them today. Like, now that Cybertron is involved back in, like, yeah, we don't have to have season 3 take place entirely on Cybertron, which, I mean, that could be fine if it did. But I wouldn't mind seeing new locales introduced, or maybe part some episodes taking place on Cybertron, some back on Earth, like mix that up a little bit. But I also want to see it have consequences for characters too, like some not just like Decepticons are after A, Autobots are after A, you know, introduce B, you know, plots resolved, people are pissed, some people are happy, whatever. Like, I'd like to see whatever this is that happens at season 3 to have long-term character consequences, too, that the characters are having to deal with themselves, like, on a personal level, instead of it just being a goal that they're all trying to reach as individual teams. So, and I, like I said, you know, over and over again, like, I'd love to see things that where we, you know, like, even with Dreadwing, and, like, in the... Like, this is something that's come up a lot, too, and it's something that I think it's kind of founded in logic or whatever, but not necessarily. I think it's just really hard wishful thinking, but, like, one really popular thing that people wish for, just to lay it out there, is, like, they want to see, like, Dreadwing change, like, switch sides, like... I don't remember what got that started. Like, a lot of people wish for that.
I think it's his just honorable streak. It's right. Kind of like a common place.
I don't remember. Was there ever a rumor that said it? Because I've read that a
not
lot
a,
of pe-
not a,
people
not a rumor.
Not really.
No,
it's
no.
Been, hey, I think it'd be a neat idea.
Okay,
and,
sure,
he's not being a jerk.
A lot of people, I've read over and over again people saying, like, isn't there a rumor that somebody's going to switch sides? And I'm like, I've never read that, but... So, but I wouldn't mind, like, having Dreadwing be honorable and... Like, I wouldn't mind some growth in him where he's like, well, maybe this isn't the right side for me, because we've seen that with him. I mean, not necessarily, like, not to the point of, like, Dinobot, but, like, I wouldn't mind seeing characters within the Decepticon ranks maybe even question what they're doing, especially when it comes into play with Cybertron getting reformatted. You know, this war has already cost him it. You know, what is Megatron going to do? Like, the last time we saw Megatron on Cybertron, not counting when he went to desecrate the Prime Grave, but, you know, he was trying to raise an army of, like, undead warriors and stuff. And, like, I wouldn't mind seeing some Decepticons even question, like, well, if we are going to reformat Cybertron, you know, what is our team going to do to help the situation? So, like, and maybe not even necessarily full on switch sides, but, like, I wouldn't mind seeing characters, like, start questioning the status quo around them or something like that. I think that would be neat. But, like I said, I think that the show's strongest point is the characters, and it's the most underused aspect of the show, at least recently. And I would really like to see these characters put into difficult situations, but then the episodes revolving around the character moments instead of the object that they're chasing.
Because at this point, I would almost even say that the characters are starting to become caricatures of themselves. Like, it's like, well, what's the personality trait for RC? Oh, let's just have her be sassy every episode, you know? Because, like, I've always thought that the majority of that stuff was justified, but, like, now it's just becoming, like, let's have RC quote a, you know, a sassy line, and now let's have, you know, Optimus speak, like, a line of old wise man, and let's have Ratchet act like he's frustrated with being on Earth again, and, like, I think all these characters have had really great, great moments where that stuff has made sense in their personalities, but now it's gotten to the point to where it's like the episodes aren't revolving around that anymore. It's just let's just kind of sneak it in and have them drop a line that where the viewer is reminded of who those characters are. But then, like, outside of that, like, nothing is really being done with them.
Ratchet, I'm walking through the ages to get across the room to lay my hands upon the fate of Cybertron.
It's like he's just going to go start typing.
So.
You sure did, says RC with her hip on one side of her.
I didn't know we were keeping her hip on one hand.
Yeah.
But her hip on her hand would be a very weird anatomy. I tried to say like anatomical, and I failed.
What if you sit on your hand? Then your hip's kind of on your hand.
That would just be a really weird scene.
Yeah. But I wouldn't say that the show has gotten to that level yet, but I would say it's starting to get dangerously close of where the characters are just caricatures of themselves. And I hope that it doesn't become that, because when you start having to remind the audience of what makes this character the character, but don't actually explore any of the character, and it just revolves around, you know, whatever the plot of the day is, then it's, you know, so it, like I said, I don't think it's gotten there yet, but it's on the approach. And as long as they need to pull it out in time, like pull the stick up, because the nose of the plane is in a fatal dive. You need to pull out of it right now.
Reach through the ages and grip the destiny of Cybertron to pull it out of the black hole it is falling into.
You mean the red hole?
The red hole it is falling into. The dark.
I don't know. Yeah. So I hope that answers your listener question, Axiom Prime. So we'll be back again. What's our next episode called again? We got a list right here. It is Inside Job. Inside Job.
Well, we're in the spoiler section. Should we read the synopsis?
Yeah. What is the synopsis for Inside Job? I haven't actually read it yet.
Let's see.
I haven't either.
Let me pull it up.
Well, damn it.
So prepared.
Well, I'm already here. Inside Job. When Smokescreen is captured, he learns the location of the Omega Key and attempts to retrieve all the other stolen keys. I appreciate that synopsis because it avoids spoilers, because the writers know that these get posted 3 weeks before you know, they're out, which means they're out 3 weeks before, or a week before, three episodes prior.
Yeah, he discovers the location of the Omega Key.
Right.
Hey, guess what? You found it.
Well, yeah, but they've spoiled that he's been captured, Zomg.
So. Oh, yeah, but I like that. I kind of like it that even though there is a spoiler in there, it somehow still doesn't spoil the bigger spoiler.
Right. I appreciate that.
The first person
to
say spoilerception gets one in the side of the face, by the way.
We're in the spoiler section.
Spoilerception. I mean, the first person to say spoilerception.
I get it. All right. It took me a minute.
There's a spoiler in the spoiler, and that's not what Inception means. And first person, they're going to get an inside job from my hand reaching through the ages towards the red hole. And what were we talking about?
I forget at this point.
That's real curious.
Ooh, do you want to know the synopsis for the one after that?
I would like to know the synopsis for the one after that.
It kind of answers one of our questions. Starscream proposes a truce with Megatron, but Dreadwing threatens to stand in the way. It looks like Starscream is using the Omega Key as leverage to get back in with the Decepticons.
Double spoiler, that's the thing I almost accidentally mentioned when we were talking about the episode.
Yeah, okay. So.
Yeah, we're gonna see some nice intrigue, hopefully. We'll see some more Starscream. The keys are going to mean they mean something. They'll make the plot happen.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how this turns out. I don't have any bad feelings about where this is going. It's all going to where Primetime generally goes. There's some level of epicness happening. I just hope that by the end of it, I'm satisfied. I'm not dreading anything. I'm still looking forward to seeing the episodes. It's the most I can ask for. The most I can ask for is to think that every episode coming up is going to be the best thing ever, and for that to actually happen. So I guess it's actually the least I could ask for is that I'll be satisfied watching it, which I have been, more or less. Any other thoughts on the status of Transformers Prime?
No.
We had a trailer for a Wii U game come out. When's any of us going to have a Wii U?
Never.
Not anytime soon.
I kind of want to mess with one, because you know that I still have only ever played a Wii for about, 20 minutes? Like, ever?
Really?
Yeah. I've only ever played it in, a demo kiosk.
Huh.
Makes me tempted by the Wii U. Not tempted enough to actually spend money on it. Just, tempted.
Yeah, don't do that.
Tempted to, steal one. But I live a roguish renegade lifestyle. What can I say? Let's see if there's anything else Prime-wise I can think of that's pertinent right now. Not really. Repro Labels. Just FYI. If you are into Prime enough to be listening to Primetime, you probably have a Prime toy or two. They just put up a Repro Label set for Rumble, who's, granted, not in the show, but his toy desperately needed some color. Check that out. Dr. Wu! Alright, I'm out. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back once again with some more Prime Time. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining me, especially. Thank you, Gog, for joining me while you are on location, as it were.
Oh, no problem.
On assignment?
On assignment? Sure. Yeah, on assignment. That's a good.
Yeah, because I have so many better things to do while I'm sitting in this hotel room.
Yeah, you could be like... we'll talk to you guys again. Until next time, we are Prime out.
It means, but you got some badass perpetrators that are here to stay.